Welcome to the 14th episode of our podcast Empower for Climate with Janine O'Keefe and Stefan Xenger. This time, our topic is related to what's going on in the world in many countries, but it's also related to both of us, especially to Janine, my co-host. We will talk today about how protesters, climate protesters, are more and more prosecuted by police, by authorities in some of the countries, and there are legal cases against them at the court, which is partly based on new types of protests, civil disobedience, which is actually not very new. But let's start talking about this, and it's my great pleasure again to be here with you today, Janine. At first, a warm welcome to you as well.
Thank you very much, Stefan. This is an issue. Civil disobedience is an issue which touches my heart in a strong way. And I also want to acknowledge that the land where I was born, Australia, has still not been ceded. And we need to recognize the original people and their right to the land and their caretaking of the land, which has been for thousands and ten thousands of years.
Yes, Janine, I think I know that this is always important for you, and there's certainly another really important aspect that is really important to show respect to all people on our planet, and many of them don't still get that respect. Now, let's talk a little bit more about you today. I'm very pleased that we can do this podcast together. Some of our audience who have not listened to all the episodes may not fully know both of us. For them, let's maybe, before we go into the topic of what is happening those days with you, also with other people in a similar situation from the climate movement, let's maybe briefly explain your background, because you've been one of the initiators of what I call the new climate movement, which of course mainly became famous because of Greta Thunberg. And you were one of the first who became aware of what she's doing and then saw her, and then together with her started this, what is now a global movement, Fridays for Future, Parents for Future, and all the other For Future movements. And there are other groups, Extinction Rebellion, Scientist Rebellion, and most recently, the Last Generation movements in some countries. So if you could just briefly explain how you started to become involved in the climate movement. We spoke about this before. It started before you met Greta, but maybe you can briefly explain that.
Thank you, Stefan. Probably really started understanding climate back in 2017 more thoroughly. And then, so at that time, I actually became involved with a climate inspirator or climate inspiration course to teach people about climate and what to do. I was part of writing that course. There was five of us. And then from there, there was a climate parliament, which I was deeply involved in. And from the Climate Parliament, as an engineer, we actually looked at solutions. These solutions were, or the solutions which we offered to the Parliament of Sweden, made no difference at all. I was so disappointed with that process. I began to dig in my personal history. And I come from Melbourne, which is like the Glasgow or the working city of Australia, where striking, worker strikes were common. And that's why I believed that civil disobedience was important. And so once Greta started striking for climate, and her strike was a school strike, that immediately gelled with me. So I supported that significantly. So even in the school striking days, which were the first 15 days in a row, I supported that significantly. And then once the adult and everybody movement of Fridays for Future began to be established, I really worked hard on that full time.
So,
and then from there, there's been newer movements with stronger civil disobedience. And if you look at history of human society, civil disobedience has been a key factor in helping us develop. So this is where I really believe we need to continue to work with.
I've been, as you know, I come from the renewable energy movement, which I find was one of the answers, not only to climate change, but when I've been observing how the climate movement has changed, of course, what we all noticed, and I later also joined the Parents for Future group in my hometown in Bonn, there was always this kind of component of civil disobedience, because it started as school strikes or strikes Fridays on Friday. So that had a kind of small component of civil disobedience. And by the way, we got into some troubles because there was an informal letter at the school of our children allowing the children to go to join the demonstrations. And then that came out and went to the ministry or somewhere. So the school got into troubles. But the school itself didn't see it as something that they wanted to follow up. But there was already from the beginning this element. And then how did you feel, did that work? I mean, you saw it globally evolving from Sweden, and then the phenomenon of having a strike spread all over the world. Did you see it as a success at the beginning? I think we can say it started 2018, in autumn.
Yeah, it started in, so Greta started on the 20th of August, 2018. And then after the first 3 weeks, we became weekly. So one of the big things which happened was to see other school strikes starting. Norway was quite big in the first couple of weeks. Even The Hague reacted quite well. And I made some short videos with Greta, and that actually got... was used as sort of a base material to start the strikes in Australia. Being Australian, I was the one who sort of sent them across, and they did some great work. And the actual 15,000 mainly young people striking on the 30th of November was a really big impact, which actually enabled Greta to have a bigger voice at the COP. Then during those first two weeks in December in 2018. And so that it showed that protest works. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, that's the issue here, is that there's a difference between demonstrating and protesting. Protesting has some sort of disruption factor in it, okay? This is really important from a media perspective, because it actually will get you more media coverage. And the idea of a child saying, I refuse to go to school, and the law says that in year 9, you have to go to school. It is the job of the state to make sure you go to school. That became civil disobedience. Year 10, 11, and 12 are not covered in the similar way for the law in Sweden. But similarly, you see it also in Bonn, you see it also in Australia, and that's the basic spreading initiative. Many people jumped on board with Fridays for Future, the more really the adult and everybody supporting movement of the school strikers. Some of them went on climate strike themselves, but that was not nearly as successful from a climate striking viewpoint. Most of the adults who actually took to the streets on a regular Friday were people who were able to take breaks from their work. And this is a very important issue, because most people who work these days have a flexible time. So therefore, they're sort of nudged into the idea of not... stopping work, not withholding their work. The traditional idea of work, of strikes, is to actually withhold your work. And therefore, you actually, the person who is governing your work, your employer or your state, has to change your working conditions or has to do something for the climate or whatever your requirement is. Otherwise, your work is not done. And that part has been harder to find, especially with our what I would consider our working conditions, where people don't have a 9-to-5 job.
I also feel a little bit, I mean, I've been following the big demonstrations, and then, of course, it all slowed down a little bit because of COVID. But like in Bonn, we had at the first big demonstration to 2019, 25,000 people in a 300,000 inhabitant city. There's without doubt, there's been an impact, but there's now many more demonstrations and many more topics are covered. So it seems to be there is some kind of routine. Which and of course all the parties say, and I think this is a global like phenomenon now, we do what you want. We make sure that we do the right policies, we put the right policies in place. So there's on the one hand this now many people are demonstrating. It's not seen as, in my perception, as something that special as it used to be, let's say 4 years ago. But the impact, when we look at it, also listening to the last scientific reports, IPCC, we had a guest from IPCC recently, obviously this all is not enough. I assume you agree, and you see, I mean, we always talk about this, how alarming you find the situation. So you personally find that these demonstrations, strikes, are they useless or just not sufficient? What's your opinion?
If you look at the history of movements, if you look at the suffragettes, for example, and you see civil disobedience in suffrage. Suffragettes,
maybe you can just briefly explain what that means. I've now read a little bit about, but suffragettes, that's the movement in
women's voting. Okay.
And I think it was but mainly also, in England, no? There was a strong...
Yeah, they were mainly in England, but they were actually across the world. Mm-hmm. They were here in Sweden as well. Mm-hmm. Also civil rights. If you look at civil rights, gay rights, all of them have used successfully civil disobedience. And so that's why it's a method to develop our society, including the rights for climate or the rights for a livable planet, or really the rights for environment. Once you understand and look into that detail, you see that there are petitions, people doing demonstrations, you see people are doing civil disobedience, and you actually even see what is called, I would say, self-defense form of violence. In the actual letters in the Swedish parliament about giving the women the vote, after 20 years of making requests, the vote was finally given to the Swedish women because they saw the riots or the revolution in Russia and said, we don't want that violence here, so we'll give it now. So what is really needed? Are the strikes enough? No, of course the strikes are not enough. Otherwise, we wouldn't see the fact that the carbon dioxide is not reducing, or actually it reduced during COVID and now it's gone way back up again. But not just that, we clearly see that the science is beginning to tell us that this is going to happen quickly, more quickly than we thought. We're decades ahead of what was understood where we would be in 2000. And like the tipping points, but just in 2018, were predicted to start somewhere between 1.5 and 2 degrees. Now, just 3 years later, 2021, the paper says, the scientists are saying five of them will start before 1.5 degrees. So the science is rapidly moving towards us, as well as us moving towards the tipping points. The best way to explain the tipping points is to think of, if you're leaning back on a chair and you're sort of swinging in that sort of comfortable position, and then suddenly you swing a little bit too far and you fall back, right? You lose control. We've never really had control over our environment, but we sit in a comfortable place. And now we're pushing and pushing ourselves out of that comfortable place. And that's why as much civil disobedience needs to be used as possible to make sure that our governments who say they're doing the right thing, who say they're obeying what is needed. But like if we take Sweden, we're only doing half of what we promised for Paris, and we're only implementing half of that. So we're flat out if we're doing 25% of what we've promised. And yet most Swedes think, oh, we're doing enough. And the media isn't screaming this at people just like they did with COVID. It comes out occasionally. Like I talked to the BBC, the UK BBC equivalent here in Sweden, talked with one of their managers, and he said, well, we did an article about a month ago at 9 o'clock in the evening and nobody wanted to see it. How useful was that? So we have a situation where people need to take a stand. And the people who understand the situation, people who know, have a duty to act. And that act needs to use as much civil disobedience as possible. And for those acts, the government is therefore trying to block us. They're putting more and more requirements on us to say that if you do this, then we'll take you to court. And even the UN is objecting to that. The UN clearly states in their recommendations of how to treat climate justice activists to never use jail, never use treason, never use sabotage, and never use sedition. They should not be charged with any of those three. So for the government to stop these acts of civil disobedience, you need to remember a climate activist doesn't, and most adults cannot withdraw their power of work because we don't have a 9-to-5 system anymore. So we can't walk off the job at lunchtime and not come back and make an impact. So therefore our only mechanism to make sure our voice is heard, well, one of our main mechanisms to make sure our voice is heard is to disrupt society in some way. And that mainly means using the traffic system to disrupt in the cities. And this is clearly where the UN recommendations say that disruption is necessary, and civil society disruption is probably the only reliable motor for creating the change which is necessary.
Yeah, before we go deeply into that, and I also wanted to then, of course, just talk with you about your personal situation now. Let's again like summarize. So we have very clearly, even with the Paris Agreement, we have even very clear legal commitments. And I mean, one could even dispute whether the Paris Agreement is enough to keep life on Earth. But that is what's been approved by governments all over the world, which is kind of legally binding. And in some cases, like again in Germany, the Constitutional Court even kind of derived a constitutional right for being protected against climate change from your government. So it's kind of it's like a human right. So this is the situation. So the right to have your government protecting you against the climate crisis is acknowledged in most countries. I would even say not only in democratic countries, legally. And now the people who say, governments, you must do something about that, and they find new forms of protest, they find themselves now in a role that they are sued of breaking laws because of civil disobedience. That's where we are now. And that's actually a quite dramatic development, especially the last days and weeks. I mean, we had Coco from Australia in one of our podcasts, which was a specific case, which found a lot of international media attention even. But now what we see is, and we come soon back to your specific case, but there was an incredible incident in Germany where the last generation was raided by police I mean, peaceful people like you and me, who always insisted we will never use any violence, they were woken up by police in the morning with guns in front of their head because police raided their apartments. And I mean, that's just incredible, because even if you disagree what these people might have done by blocking the road, there's certainly very difficult even legally to justify why they would go there with a gun. And these things are happening. We heard from the Netherlands a few days ago that 1,500 people were arrested when they blocked roads. But your case goes back, it's now I think even a year ago, when you blocked the road together with others in May 2022. And you will soon go to court, I understand, next week. Can you explain that specific? What happened in a year ago? What did you do? Why did you do that? So just explain the situation.
Okay, so for many years, I've done civil disobedience, which actually interacted with the police. I started this probably the first time in November 2020, where we actually did raising the alarm in front of the Prime Minister's palace, okay? And I landed there in detention. So I probably landed in detention around half a dozen times, but never gone to court. So this last one, which is now classified as sabotage, was about 10 of us or so walked out onto a freeway. Okay, so we slowed the traffic down and we walked out onto a freeway, and then we sat on the freeway and blocked the traffic. The police were immediately called, and because the truth is, people who are driving cars get pretty angry, so they're actually less safe than the police. So we happily make sure that the police are within, are supporting us as quickly as possible. Why did I do it? I did it, it was done on the first day of the 50-year anniversary for the first climate conference in Stockholm. So we're actually having an anniversary party called Environmental Conference 50 Years On. And it was the Monday of that conference. When you look at that conference, you find out that Olof Palme, who was the Prime Minister of Sweden 50 years ago, he declared ecocide at that conference, if you listen to what he said. What has happened since then? What? Not very much. Sweden has continued to do many things well, but the reason for that, for example, that we have a low emissions when it comes to energy, is because we didn't have any coal. So we used hydro and water. It was more what I would call a decision about self-determination of the country rather than an environmental decision. It was a good decision, but it's no longer, it was for the wrong reasons. And still, decades, we've known since 1959 that the climate would begin to break down. We've had decades of warning. And how much have we really done? Our emissions are still rising. People living in countries like Sweden and Europe and America have far more emissions than Africa and countries which have been put up with decades of climate breakdown. Now we're finally seeing some of that here. So why did I do it? Well, it's our emissions which have to go down, Sweden's emissions. I feel like I have a lot of privilege. I'm white, older, female, well-educated, I understand climate, and I am very, very scared of the tipping points. They can lead to a breakdown of our entire society. Civilization, as we know it, may not exist anymore. Many scientists are already saying that. So therefore, I felt a need to step up my activism and show that I have to be prepared to put my own self at risk rather than just ask other people to take risks.
I mean, what you did, you blocked the road? Did you sit down on the road?
Yep, it was a freeway.
Mm-hmm.
It's an arterial link around Stockholm. I don't feel, you know, I feel like it was a sane decision. It's like breaking glass when there's a fire. It's a small little act to show disobedience, to make sure the voice of climate is heard.
But that concrete situation, you didn't use glue at that time, I suppose. I mean, it's that became more common, I think, a little bit later. Did you glue yourself on the
road? I tried.
At that time, 2022?
Yeah, I tried that time.
Okay. But did it work? So did they have problems, police, to remove you from the road?
No, the policeman saw me doing it.
And then they stopped you. So how long did you block the road, actually?
I was probably on there. That's probably in the records, actually, but it's probably less than 10 minutes.
Okay, so I mean, one can say that this is not really something that has a big impact on life of other people, and there was no risk that would threaten anyone's health or anything that comes from these less than 10 minutes of blocking the road. I mean, just let's, aside from the discussion now, what will the court will ask you? I have a question. Did you want to block that road and not, let's say, the next fuel station where the cars are getting what makes the climate, or what destroys the climate?
It was really a decision. Basically, my impetus came from I wanted to do something around this 50-year anniversary. Mm-hmm. And so I made contact via internet to a group which said, we're doing something fairly serious. If you want to join in this way. And I turned up. Not much more. So it wasn't that I was choosing the event. I didn't design it. But yes, I think it's... it wasn't a serious disruption, as you say. And the amount of media we got from it wasn't huge. The biggest thing I suppose is happening is the court case. Four of us are being taken to court for sabotage. And it's because it was a public road and it's seen as being made too much of a disruption. Now, Sweden, though, is using this sort of sabotage. It's straight out of this definition, this law of sabotage is actually for threatening the defense system of Sweden, right? So when you actually read the law, it says that, you know, you've threatened the defense services, you've threatened the national security, etc., as well as you've made a public disturbance on a road, right? So it's the one law goes from being, you know, national defense the whole way to stopping traffic, right? Which is a massive requirement for a law to take. You know, you would think that they were two different crimes, but they're not.
They at that time, was there any soldiers around who wanted to defend Sweden against maybe a potential Russian invasion? But it sounds a bit funny, but that what you're telling me sounds quite absurd. I mean,
that is how
sabotage is defined. So sabotage is actually in more a military sense definition.
It was the law is originally written around military perspective, and yet it's being applied to individuals who happen to make some sort of disruption to the society. Now, we did a calculation because the police are also doing a calculation and they're saying that by blocking a road, we're wasting a person's time and money of around a couple of hundred crown, okay, 20 or 30 euro an hour. That is a hypothetical amount because, like we've said, most people work and they have, you know, they're maybe blocked for an hour, but it's really their free time which is lost because they still turn up to work an hour later and then they... just work an hour longer. We know that. But so that's a hypothetical loss. So we then actually did a calculation of what is happening from a from an environmental perspective or a climate perspective with delayed action. So the police or the prosecutors can calculate that our action costs the Swedish society between 2 and 3 million crown. But delaying climate action is actually costing us an extra 2 to 3 million crown per hour, every hour of every day.
I mean, it's anyway quite funny if the police claims a compensation that the other people may ask you for, because some people may not want to ask you for a compensation. But is there any decision already? Was there any decision taken on that basis of sabotage, or is your case not the first case?
Okay, so this is probably, there's been already 6 or 7 cases, and mm-hmm. every case when sabotage has been used against the person, I think there's been 20 cases. All of them have been charged or, sorry, been convicted, except one, okay? And that one, the prosecutor is now taking to the appeals court to have it the conviction made. One, we, as activists, we're taking as many as we can to the appeals court. So three, I think all of them are sitting at the appeals court. Two of them that have gone to the appeals court have been confirmed that it was sabotage, and now they've gone to the High Court. One of them was taken into the appeals court and actually tried, and it was a minor or a child who'd been convicted of sabotage, and there it was overturned.
Okay, so it will be may take long. I mean, the whole now next week, it's the first time you are at the court. So that court might take a decision. Will it be next week or will it take longer? So you just have the first kind of.
So it'll be the court on Wednesday, and then 2 weeks later we'll get a decision, and then we'll have 2 weeks to appeal. The chances that it won't be a conviction are very, very low.
But how does the court? I mean, you have already probably had some exchange. Do you have a lawyer?
Yes, I have a lawyer, and it will be done in English because that's my first language.
Okay.
And so hopefully we can record as much as we can and publicize it. I'm not sure what we can do. But people need to understand that this is a mechanism that the UN warned against. They said to use sabotage, jail, sedition or treason would create a chilling effect on climate justice activism. And that's what the police or the justice system in Sweden, that's their goal. And that's what they're achieving. And that's really sad, because that means we're delaying the decisions which have to be taken. These decisions are about climate. It's not like, oh, maybe we can just skip them. It's not like that. When it comes to climate, we either do them now or we do them more in a hurry later. And it'll be a lot of destruction until they're done.
I mean, when a court takes a decision, they must always consider the different pros and cons. And obviously, there is the argument by the government or the public prosecutor saying that you've disturbed other people. So that is what they say, and they call this sabotage, which I really find, well, I mean, funny maybe sounds a bit not serious enough, but absurd. Let me put it like that. Blocking a road as a sabotage of national security. And then, but you have on your side, you are claiming that the goal of what you're following is protecting the life of all Swedish people. Is the court, is it your expectation that the court will at all consider it, look into it as your motivation and say we have to balance those two aspects?
Well, there's two aspects, you're right. Is this an emergency right? Is this what I am doing, is this breaking glass to save somebody from a house fire? That is one way, one legal process which we can use, and I probably will use that process. That has never been won in Sweden. So people normally don't use it. One of the main reasons why it isn't one is because there was around 30 years ago, a small little town claiming emergency right to block a road in Sweden because the atomic waste was going to be stored in their town. And they said, this is an emergency issue for the town and for all of Sweden. And the truth is the court ruled at that time, this may be an emergency issue, but it's not for all of Sweden. So we convict you of not having the right of emergency. So therefore the court always refers to that one case as precedence. But the truth is when it comes to climate, it is an emergency and it is for all of Sweden. Shouldn't be used as precedence, but unfortunately the people doing the judgments, and this is interesting when it comes to Sweden, that it's not just the judge who decides, it's also something called nämndemän. So it's between 3 and 4 people who are politically attached to the political parties who are voted in to do what is called a sort of political jury. Mm-hmm. So in one of the sabotage cases, and I have to double check this to be sure, but one of the cases, the judge wanted to not convict the activist, but two of the, what is called the political jury, who were actually fairly far right, said, no, we disagree, they have to be convicted. So it was a political decision rather than actually being a judgment decision. Unfortunately, okay. That's the way the Swedish county court works. And I'm pretty sure it works even the whole way up to the high court. I'd have to double check the high court, but it definitely works in the appeals court. And so therefore, we'll probably just be conviction after conviction. I don't see much hope for the Swedish system to adapt in this situation. The second way to appeal to the court is, like as you say, in the constitution of Sweden, there is a law which says we have to create a planet which is livable for the future effectively. And we could appeal on that case because that's what the government is not doing. And then the third one is that we in the constitution in Sweden is we have a law which allows us to demonstrate, and it allows us to demonstrate on the road in public places, which includes the road. And then it's up to the police to decide, is this too much of a disruption or too little of a disruption? And this is where the grey line is defined. And this is a really interesting aspect because the police, I've talked to them about this, the police like to be able to treat climate justice activists exactly the same as they would treat, for example, some burning of the Quran in Örebro or some other small town, which has been, you know, happened half a dozen times in Sweden, in particular just before the election, to create fear and influence the election. But the truth is the UN recommends that you do treat climate justice activists differently. And yet the police find that very difficult to do because they feel like that would be being unfair.
As if it is a kind of international law that you have the right to burn the Quran or whatever inside hate amongst religions.
Yes.
That is a quite strange argument. Of course, I somehow, understand is a bit too much, but from a policeman, an individual policeman who is not really dealing with these matters, it's somehow okay. It's some pressure on the people, but they shouldn't take that decision. That must be taken on a higher level, I suppose. So what I hear from you is that it sounds as if this will go through all those courts to the Supreme Court. Maybe also we will see that case at the European Court of Justice.
Of course, I think one of them will land there. I can't imagine that it wouldn't. The two sabotage cases sitting in the High Court is actually from German people, two Germans which were on the road here in Sweden at different times during August last year. And they've done, you know, really made, they're going ahead with, they probably will land up in the European High Court. They're very brave people. I should double check, but I'm pretty sure they're happy to have their name known. So Kevin and Christian have done a great job here in Sweden to actually take those steps. Those two people have worked a long time in Last Generation and done a significant amount of work and need to be, we need to give respect to civil disobedience, because civil disobedience is about improving our society, especially the laws, which, as you say, the police can't quite work out what to do. The courts can't work out what to do. Another way to give respect to our society is actually to use citizens assembly to help us with these difficult issues. And that is one of the issues which is commonly promoted by Extinction Rebellion and groups, movements, which see that civil disobedience is absolutely necessary. And adults need to find their niche for civil disobedience. We can't just rely upon school children having their niche. All people need to find forms of civil disobedience to make sure that their protest is understood. And it's, when we have the knowledge, we have to act.
Just as you brought up this other case, which I think is something that although other people sometimes say, and I mean, I'm following, of course, more closely the German discussion than in other countries, because the media are full at the moment. So people say, or it's more from the right-wing conservative side, they say that, well, if those climate activists are claiming those rights, and why should others not do so? But you made a clear point that there is a difference. Huh? The difference is, and you compared that with this burning of a Quran, is that the basis on which you protest and what you protest for is legally recognized. So it's a legal kind of, we talked about this before, it has to be seen as having a character of a human right, being protected against climate change.
Absolutely. And this is actually a big problem for people to understand. Even, for example, when I was talking with the Swedish television last week, or many police, they will say, oh, I'm here to make sure that you get to your democratic voice is heard for your cause, as if it's my little thing. And, you know, like I'm burning a Quran, or I'm doing something which to me is actually against somebody else's civil rights of protecting minorities. It's not. This climate is fact. It is actually scientific fact. And to not protect the climate and the laws, if our laws are not prepared to collect climate laws of nature, then our society's laws are going to fall apart. So our laws rely upon climate laws.
I think from the kind of an ethical viewpoint, the situation seems to be rather clear, because there's strong support from religious authorities. The Pope made also again recently very strong statements supporting anything that protects climate. Dalai Lama has come up with strong statements as well. We heard recently the UN Secretary General saying even not only we must finally act against climate crisis, but also saying that the climate activists shouldn't be prosecuted. So he made very strong statements. I had in my podcast, in my German podcast a while ago, a Jesuit, a pastor from Germany, who is also blocking roads. And I asked him also from an ethical viewpoint, what is your answer? If I ask you, Jesus said, if one beats you on the one side, then you should also offer him the other side. And he said, no, that's not appropriate, because Jesus expelled those people who did wrong things. He was against them. And this is not about me personally. It's about my next, I mean, my the people around me, about mankind. which gives me that right from an ethical perspective to protest in the way that I'm doing. So there are many strong arguments, but it seems that the kind of main point that in the public debate is not yet really so clear is that the difference of the course. So climate is something, you and me, very clear. It's not negotiable. How can we make that case stronger? That this is not just an interest group.
I wish I had the answer to that question. And if I did, I'd work hard towards achieving it. For me, right now, that is what Just Stop Oil, Last Generation, Stop Fossil Fuel Subsidies in Australia, and the Restore the Wetlands, which is also called Återställa vårt Marker here in Sweden. That's really what they're doing, is they're like the suffragettes, breaking glass to just make sure it's in people's faces every day. Maybe even like if you took the case of the artworks, people throwing soup on the plastic of an artwork, people putting black oil or water-based paint, which looks like oil, in the Italian fountain. It's just to keep it clearly in people's faces. So until we make the next step, the correct next step, which is that we have a weekly or even daily 1 hour dedicated to climate breakdown so people understand it in good detail, just like we did with COVID. I think it was every second day here in Sweden. So we had a sort of 1.5 hour news broadcast every second day to explain the difficulties of COVID and why we had to change our practices, why we needed to wear masks, why we needed to wash our hands, why we needed to stay off public transport to let emergency workers get to work, why we should work from home, why we should change our lives. Until we are doing that constantly, then we need to continue the civil disobedience and even stronger and stronger. Because this resistance in our society to accept that this is an emergency which needs significant change and getting most of society on board. We will never have everybody on board. COVID never had everybody on board. We will never have that. Even to just get 60% on board constantly would be a significant step. And our radio stations, our news, all the BBC equivalent, even I think it's ZDF in Germany and the SVT here in Sweden, ABC in Australia, all of them need to step up. If the governments are not willing to do these press conferences 1 hour a day, then they need to do it. And it needs to be, you know, in prime time, somewhere between 6 and 8 o'clock in the evening, so people get it in their faces until they begin to understand the science and that this is serious.
So you're intentionally not blocking, as I asked you before, like fossil infrastructure. Some are discussing blocking pipelines or refineries. So you could just block simply a fuel station that I mentioned. That was a big, of course, struggle in Germany in particular around coal mines. What you're doing is intentionally disturb normal people in their lives so that they become aware.
I think that's the key point, is that a lot of people are against that. They say, oh, that has a rebound effect, that these people will actually dislike you. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, statistics done in Berlin, and I've been in Berlin with Last Generation, people go by and say thank you. They know.
Others are starting to kick, of course, as well. No? So we've seen terrible pictures as well. So, yeah. But I think that's also important to understand, because there's this argument always saying it's not directly good for the climate if you block a road. There might be different ways, but what you say very clearly is this is not the point. We're not stopping climate change with this action directly, but we want to wake up people.
Yeah, I think that would be my general analysis. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, like, if Fridays for Future small groups every Friday had actually created that. So the strikes were not just people who could take the time off, but the strikes were actually emergency workers leaving for 2 hours. The turnaround would be tomorrow. And the truth is there's laws to stop emergency workers from striking. So we're actually in a catch-22. Those people are stuck. And actually, when we do significant actions to, for example, the pension fund here in Sweden, we did an action on 2 weeks ago on Monday. So we're doing as many things as we can. We're not just blocking roads. We're doing as much as we can. But when we did that, the people who are in the pension fund, who want the money to be redirected away from fossil fuel infrastructure in Nigeria, in many African countries, they're cheering us on silently because they're not allowed to speak out. And I actually was listening to a podcast from Geelong just last week, where an IPCC author, David his first name was, said that being in the CSIRO in Australia and being in a university in Australia meant that you can't speak out against government policy. So a lot of these people are stuck in a matrix, knowing that there's breakdown, but unable to break out of their situation. Because if they did, they'd lose their job. If they lose their job, they lose their house. And if they lose their house, they lose their family. So they need climate activists to step up. And they also should be stepping up in their private time as well.
Yeah, I mean, where I come from, of course, I know very well how strong those interests are. We are fighting against. These are mainly fossil fuel companies. They are the main barrier. I mean, we have to be just clear about that. I was very pleased that recently one of the most famous German energy economists spoke out very clearly. She named the companies who she said are so powerful, BASF, RWE, and E.ON. She said they have so much damage. The German, that was referring to the German discussion. And I think this is something that not many people dare to say very clearly, hey, these are the companies who are bringing us into these troubles, and they have an impact, too much impact on the governments. By the way, there's been this just, and now just briefly, before we have to conclude, of course, as well, this idea has briefly popped up of citizens' councils or whatever you call it, people's assembly.
Citizens' assemblies, yeah.
Yeah. With the experience I have working also with political different kind of committees, etc., and considering how I see that those strong interests are embedded in our governments, I'm not very hopeful that such new ways of trying democracy would help a lot, because then you don't have experts. And initially it may work, but who has the power to define the agenda and whom to invite? That would be my great concern, because these embedded interests will find ways again to not monopolize, but have strong impact on whom do we invite
to a hearing of that. The invitation needs to be statistician, which means it needs to be random. That is key. So that helps a lot from your second question. But the agenda, setting the agenda, clearly will be political, just like you see in the courts where you've got two people from the right and far right able to influence the decision. So, yes, we do need to be very careful. But I do believe citizens' assemblies has the huge impact of being able to educate people in a reasonably rapid way as well. So it actually gives a secondary effect. But I would also agree with you that we can't rely upon these large companies. We need to understand they acknowledged the climate crisis in 1959. They understood it well. They had empirical evidence. In 1850s, it was modeled. In the 1950s, it was proven. And then they've lied and undermined every effort to make these changes. And they've made sure that you and I didn't understand it 1959 is before I was born, and yet I didn't hear about climate breakdown at school once. Like, I did 4 years engineering and I didn't hear about it once. That's just astounding. So we've wasted 64 years expecting them to act, and they're not acting. And that's why we have to step up ourselves.
Yeah, that I think is a very good conclusion of the discussion that we've had today. Well, I'm sure that we're just at the beginning of a public, of a social debate, and especially of the legal dispute around this. How the case of climate change mitigation, of solving the climate crisis, will be balanced in our legal systems, and it will also be proving whether our democratic systems work sufficiently. I'm still at the moment confident. I must be confident because I believe in democracy, that we can solve it, but we have hard work in front of us. I wish you all the best, that the court tests a balanced view on that, and that you come out and with recognition of what you are doing for our society. That, I think, would be the outcome that we would need to see, that people like you who've done so much for the society are acknowledged for that and not punished.
Thank you, Stefan. I hope you're correct. And let me say just one last comment here, that you don't have to be positive. When I think about and understand and go through the detail of the tipping points, I am not positive. I accept that I lose hope. Okay. Once I go through that and I watch other people accept that the hope is slipping away from us, we are seeing breakdown and too much, then on the other side of that, I see people still acting. That act is courage. That courage gives me hope.
Thank you, Janine. And with this, thank you to our audience and goodbye. And our next guest and the topic will be announced as usual on our social media. Bye-bye.